You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So to start off, it seems like ACT has a lot of concerns about the upcoming vaccine rollout, mainly in regards to the timeline for delivery. Could you elaborate on these concerns for me?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of our concern is based off the fact that it doesn't feel that the government is actually being truly transparent about what's happening with the vaccine rollout. I mean, I was listening to Newstalk ZB this morning, and Ashley Bloomfield went on the radio and essentially said that we haven't actually put an order in yet for vaccines because we're still waiting on MedSafe approval. And that completely contradicts what the minister, Chris Hipkins, was saying just on the weekend, which was that other countries have more of an emergency than we do, and giving an indication that it was the drug companies pushing back the fact that New Zealand wasn't getting the vaccine. So I think we just need to keep on asking those hard questions of the government about what is actually happening with the vaccines and when will we actually get them.
Right, yeah. So as you mentioned with Chris Hipkins, David Seymour has speculated that we've given drug companies discretion to decide for themselves which countries need the vaccine and when. Could you just give me an overview of that claim? Do you think that's a realistic concern?
I think it is a realistic concern because Chris on a multiple occasions has come out and said that the drug companies are looking to prioritise countries that have emergencies happening, you know, within their borders. And so, you know, only a few months ago he was saying that would be first on the queue to getting a vaccine. Now, both of those things can't be true. Either we are at the front of the vaccine queue or being completely left behind. And it certainly seems to me that we're being left behind because over 50 other countries have had the vaccine already. So I think he needs to be more upfront about what we have actually signed and when are we actually going to get vaccines.
Now, obviously, this is a difficult topic because New Zealand has managed to minimise the impact that COVID is having on our day-to-day lives, whereas other countries are still very much suffering. How do we decide when it's the right time for us to get the vaccine over other countries?
I think certainly, you know, we are lucky that we don't have COVID currently in our community. And so there is a great threat in other countries. I mean, I even look at London and what's happening there. But of course, we can't become complacent and think that we're somehow a whole bunch safer now because it's not in our community. We need to be making sure that we're prioritising vaccinating our border workers, those essential staff who are the barrier to getting that COVID within the country. And sure, there are what the minister is saying are emergencies overseas, but it doesn't take much for there to be an emergency here as well.
That's a good point. I also want to quickly touch on ACT's gang and firearm approach, which has been brought up again due to the rising gang tensions in Christchurch. What does ACT's proposal entail in this regard?
Yeah, so we're looking at the fact that, you know, it doesn't seem to be you have to take much of a break in reading the news and there's another gang violence article, another shooting somewhere in Auckland or Christchurch, even Wellington. They seized a sawn-off shotgun from a gang-related incident. There is just rife gang gun violence happening in New Zealand at the moment and it doesn't appear that the government is actively doing anything to solve this problem. I mean, over the last few years we've heard an awful lot about restricting gun use in New Zealand, but we haven't heard much about what is happening with gangs and gun violence, and that's where the problem really lies. So our solution there is that we would make it, if the police find an illegal firearm at a gun ran organisation, they would be able to seize that gun, but also they'd be able to seize assets that are associated with it. Because if you look at why a lot of people join gangs, it's for all the bling that goes with it. So if you're able to disincentivize people joining the gangs to begin with, that's great. But if you're also able to do it in the process of getting rid of really dangerous guns off the street, that can only be better.
What benefits does this proposal have over the current approach that we're using to gang violence?
Well, the current approach is that we can seize some assets, but it's, the onus is on the police to prove that there is a connection between the crime that's been related and the assets being seized. We're saying that would make it easier to seize those assets, so they wouldn't have to have such a high threshold for proof of the assets. And really the problem there is that we do have a lot of gun violence happening from gangs. That's where it primarily is. And so if we can get rid of those guns off the streets, those illegal guns, that can only be safer for New Zealanders.
So lastly, ACT has been very critical of protesters at Shelley Bay in Wellington. Could you just give me an overview of why you believe this protest is unjustified?
So I think there's a dangerous precedent that was set last year with Ihumato, which was essentially that the government looked at what was a dispute on land and set the precedent that the government would actually buy up that land. And if you look at what's happening at Shelley Bay now, you've also got a dispute over land. And rightly so, they have gone to court. Now, that's the right thing to do because it's difficult to know what is the actual correct approach to take. And hopefully that will come through in the court. But while that's being dealt with, they've also decided to squat on the land in the hope that the government would step in. And I think that is a real danger to what could happen in the future, which is disputed land should go through the courts and not that the government will always automatically step in.
So, yeah, as you were saying in the release, Seymour was very critical about the government response to Ihumatao. So I'd like to reflect on why ACT believes the response to Ihumatao was unwarranted.
Well, it's about the upholding of property rights and essentially... If you start getting rid of rule of law and property rights, you start looking at the fact that we have had the Treaty of Waitangi Disputes Tribunal for many years going through this process that was supposed to be full and final, and potentially having actions from the government that unravels, you know, decades worth of work to get to the position that we're in now. To relitigate all of this could potentially end up with property rights being brought up again and more claims that was supposed to be full and final coming out.
So I do want to ask, in a lot of these cases, the outrage is coming from the fact that a lot of these deals are done in secret. You know, the iwi aren't consulted on these decisions. So how can you justify upholding deals that were underhanded in the first place?
Well, ultimately, these are very difficult issues. I would agree with you there. But I think what Shelley Bay, the dispute there in particular, has done well is that they have acknowledged that there has been an issue between kind of the elders or the people making the decisions and the larger iwi. And I think they have done the right thing in taking that to court to ask for a position to be made. I don't think it's great to get into the position where if you start barring land, that the government automatically starts stepping in to resolve disputes for you.
When you do bring these sorts of issues into court, obviously property developers do have an advantage over these protesters because they have greater access to resources, legal resources and stuff like that. So how do you justify, you know, protecting the interests of these property developers and saying that this battle should be fought in the courts over Indigenous people, especially when it comes to land that is culturally significant?
I think in the case of Shelley Bay, it's in fact the iwi taking their own context to court rather than the developer. But I'd have to look into that one further just to make sure about that. But I think that is the correct position to be taken. I especially know that in a lot of cases, there are lots of pro bono lawyers who'd be willing to work for people in the iwi. So I don't think access to the information is a issue, especially when if processes do go to court, all of that information needs to be made available to the people involved in the case.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.